doesn't easy. Have quite the,
it's a hollow, not solid. We will call to order the House Committee on Land Use for Tuesday, February 17th, 2009. And open a work session on House Bill 2229. Colleagues and those who are in the room with us, as well as those who are watching on the video system, we are meeting not only in this room but in this setting because I really want this to be a work session. I want us to look across the table at each other and see if we can understand each other's perspectives on this and try to find if there's any common ground, what that is. And where there's not, for us to make sure we're clear about different perspectives represented by committee members and see if we can identify opportunities for some common ground. And personally, sitting along a dais where we can't really even look at each other makes it hard to have that kind of dialogue and collaboration. And I will give a little bit of credit to the PUC for giving me the idea for this setting. If you've ever attended a Public Utility Commission meeting, they routinely sit in this kind of a structure where they look at each other and the audience or the people interested in what they're doing sit around them and observe it. And I have found it, in observing their work, it seems to be effective. So I'm going to give it a couple tries, maybe this time in the next work session that we have, and then get some feedback from committee members and see if this is helpful for people. We do have a little bit of updating our record to do today on House Bill 2229. The following items of written testimony were distributed to all members and received into the public record on this bill on February 10th, but because I lost the sheet of paper in front of me, were not added to the list of verbal acknowledgments. Testimony from Charles Wagner of Hillsborough, Dr. Thomas Keffer of Hood River, and Bob Stacey, Executive Director of 1000 Friends of Oregon. We also have additional written testimony received into the record on February 12th that our two vice chairs will identify for the oral record. Representative Garrett.
Yes, Madam Chair, we received written materials from Kristen Anderson of Benton County, Jerry Diethelm of Eugene, Lisa Hamilton-Trake of Portland, Deborah Higby of Benton County, Catherine Jernstedt of Clackamas County, Bill Merchant of Beaver Creek, Julie Russell of Washington County, and Dwayne Weeks of Clackamas County.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, we entered in for on behalf of Jessica Aiden of Benton County, Ralph Chantry, Portland, Jake Gibbs, Douglas County, Ken Henschel, Portland, Stephen Klein, Portland, William Coatser, Benton County, Becky Riley, Lane County, Kathy Sales, City and County not provided.
Okay. Thank you, Representative. And we have additional materials that were received today, committee members. Ms. Ross, do we actually have them available to committee members? Oh, okay. They were distributed electronically, but I wanted to acknowledge them in the verbal record, and they are from Dave Honeycutt with Oregonians in Action, the American Planning Association, and Mark Bartlett of Portland. Additional materials received from Robert Liberty with the Metro Council, Linda Ludwig with the League of Oregon Cities, and Todd Cornett, the Planning Director for Wesco County, which followed up on their personal appearances before us. So all of those are in our record and now part of our oral record as well. Thank you. Colleagues, as I mentioned earlier, I have asked Vice Chair Garrett to head up an effort to help us organize the work around House Bill 2229 because it's a pretty lengthy and complex bill. I want, first of all, to see if there are areas of agreement that we can support and say put on a shelf as something that the committee will want to move forward, and then spend some time wrestling with areas where there might be some disagreement, either among ourselves with different preferences voiced by committee members, or there may be one section of the bill that we can all agree we don't like, but I'm not sure we can agree on what we would like in lieu of that to achieve an objective of giving a bit more ownership and authority in the land use process to local governments and a reflection of local values. So what I was hoping the first half hour of our meeting today might be an opportunity for each of us to give our overall thoughts on the bill and the testimony we've heard, trying to focus on areas where there may be common agreement and support, and then identifying areas that individual members don't like. That identification will be most helpful for the committee if you could also identify what principles would guide you in rewriting the sections that you would prefer to change. Vice Chair Garrett, are you prepared to start, or is there someone who wants to start on that conversation?
I'll start. Madam Chair, I have a cough drop in my mouth, so I would like to defer to someone else.
Okay. Representative Esquivel, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Sometimes it sounds like I have a cough drop in my mouth, Representative, but this time I don't. This bill is one that, I'll be honest with you, I don't find much value in this bill. I'll be quite candid with you. I'm very disappointed in it. I was assuming, which is incorrect on my part, that we would have something that would be a DLCDC and STAKEO 100 overview with broad-based policy and allowing local government, in spite of the fact that some people think that local government is not is sometimes, what did they use the term, in the back pocket of developers, that's what it was. And Representative Cowan and I came from local government, and I know that not to be true. Your local government's the purest and most accountable form of government you have in the United States, period. I think that if we had a broad-based policy from the state in conjunction with STAKEO 100 and allowed municipalities and counties to control their own destiny, then we'd have a pretty good mousetrap, because then they would justify to DLCDC why they did what they did or what they were proposing. I think that's a good basis. This particular bill, in my opinion, just adds another layer, and it's more cumbersome. Sections 6, 7, and 8, I kind of got a kick out of those, because I can't imagine getting two counties ever to agree to those sections. At best, it would be difficult, I will put it that way, representatives. The Section 17 of the annexation part is not a very good part as well. I think that's not a very good part. There's so many different ways in which we annex, and I didn't know that until I came up here. I just assume everyone annexed like my community does, and that's where you apply to be annexed, and you request to come into the city. And we don't have any annex problems in Southern Oregon because of that, because it's a volunteer basis. It's not a forceful thing. But then I found out that other municipalities draw a line and saying, one hit of the gavel and it's all in the urban growth boundary, so it's or in the city. So it's a different ways to get across the street. some are particularly good for other areas, but it's not necessarily good for one size doesn't fit all. But that's the striking thing that came out of this. The RPS process, I think, has some validity to it, and I think it's something that could be worked out. I think there needs to be an opt-out of municipalities involved in a regional problem-solving that if they decide they do not want to participate, they could opt out if they were contiguous only to one city, not to two. So, and they can't have someone in the middle pulling the pin, but you certainly could have people pulling the pin on the flanks. I think that's okay. I disagree with the fact that if a municipality pulls out of it, that the whole process should come to an abrupt end. We've been grappling with this for about 8-9 years in Southern Oregon. We're the only one that's real close to getting anything done. And then they had a change in their councils down there. And I haven't had an update on this, by the way, that may derail the whole process of 9 years of work, may go down the drain. So I think we need an opt-out there. Having said what I have, I think we had quite a group of people here, and I just counted there were 7 people from outside the Willamette Valley that testified publicly. I've come to a conclusion that there's definitely two worlds. One is the Willamette Valley, and the other one is, I know, looking at a perspective of Southern Oregon, and I would include my brothers and sisters from the coast and from Eastern Oregon as well into that. I do know that it's okay, you can have your different approaches because we're all different. I do know that the flexibility that everyone talked about in this bill or during the hearings is not true. I don't care what anyone says. You may talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk when it comes to getting an approval. I think that if we craft this to where people can control what they want to do within their own community is much better than trying to get one size fits all. And I know people say, I don't want to hear that because it's not true, but it is true. I defy anyone to tell me all the AR rulings that have been written from Senate Bill 100 that one person actually knows. The stack of books in here that we would have, the written material to look at all those AR rulings, as well as what the legislature has done on top of it, would boggle anyone's mind, let alone fully understand what that process was.
So, Representative, is there anything in this bill that you like?
Well, I'm working on that. Yes, I think the regional problem solving, I think we need to work on that, but I mean, there isn't much in this bill that I like at all, which I've written to you in some correspondence. I don't see much what we can salvage out of this.
And the answer then is to leave the system as it is.
Well, it's either
like
that or make
it
more
better.
Cumbersome and more layered.
Okay. Representative Clem?
Did I have my hand up? I'm always quiet. I don't know why you call on me for an opinion. We're supposed to be talking about the confines of the bill? Or can I just talk?
He got to.
The original question was, what aspects of the task force's recommendations do you like?
Perfect. So I think we have to look a little broader than these bills at their recommendations. So, for example, the one that said we need to have a financial incentive system of some kind, other than just zoning, for farmers and growers to keep their land in agriculture when it otherwise, through UGB expansion alone, will eventually get consumed. I think that's an important recommendation that's really represented in some other bills, not in these bills. So I would like to at least have us consider bringing some of the bills that are sitting in my committee, Ag and Natural Resources, on transfer of development rights programs over into this conversation, because this was a recommendation they made. It's just not in these bills, probably because they knew we were going to have other bills. I don't know. And there may be others like that are recommendations they made that say, because I think really when you get down to the two-county thing, and I'm hoping we can sort of figure out, you know, some way to answer this, they're saying, you've got some real treasures that you got to protect, and then we're coming up with a way to figure out what the things that aren't really treasures, but we pretend they're treasures, are. I mean, that's essentially what I think they're trying to say. And I'm not sure I agree that just because it's, you know, right now a guy doesn't think that he can put a house on, or put a farm on it, it should become a house immediately. What are the sideboards for the neighboring farming operation, that kind of thing. But I'm open to the concept of exploring what's broken with the existing process, whether it's too expensive, too many lawyers involved, what's going on that makes the rezoning, when you don't believe you have farmland and the maps say you do, what is it that's broken about that that we could fix? So I do think we need to think about, though, the how do you protect the treasures, too. The TDRs is one, but the EFU reform is another, to say if it's truly EFU, let's figure out what things are going to happen there or not, and simultaneously we're going to figure out what's not EFU that's called EFU. But they go together. You can't just do one and not the other, I think. So the concept that I did hear support for from the public was a strategic plan or a long-term plan. The concept of some principles, I don't know if these principles, I heard a lot of people say we really want to hear the task force talk more about greenhouse gas emissions and the effect of our land use system on those. So I think we should, you know, consider redoing some of these goal or principles. Now, if the principles have no effect in law and they're not really binding at all, we're just going to be reverting back to the goals and the layers of things that have come out, court decisions. I mean, the operation of land use is now all over the place. Statutes, goals, decisions, administrative rules. So simplification, if it's possible, is something that I heard, and I like that. Again, devil's in the details. You're going to have to see what simplification means, because it can't gut the system and the intent just to simplify things. I was interested in my friend from the home builders. Where is he? There he is. I was interested in his concept that, you know, I really wanted to hear the talk about how, when we build within urban growth boundaries, what do we need to do to make that more doable? Because there are goodies on the table, probably, that we could say to the home builders, let's hear your ideas for making density easier, better for you all to get it done. And what does that then mean outside the UGB when you get to do that? So I think, and that's sort of a TDR concept maybe too. So anyway, that's my thinking. Strategic plan, redefining what the task force's recommendations are so it's not just these two bills, and really try and make use of the thousands of hours that these Oregonians put in, a great personal time expense, and now bullets in their hide from every member of the public on all sides of this issue. I'd like to make some good of it, if possible.
Just randomly, Representative Winger, do you have some thoughts?
Does it seem random to you?
Representative Clem seemed random, but I'm sure yours will be cogent.
Mine is random as usual.
I guess I had hopes that the task force would make recommendations that would... I guess I had two hopes. One was probably never likely to be fulfilled, and the other one I was a bit disappointed in. And I guess the first hope is that we would admit that we have some irreconcilable desires in this state, and that we're trying to force the land use system to accommodate. And I'm not sure an honest discussion is always being held about how irreconcilable those are in some cases. But I did not expect the task force to solve that issue. But the one thing I think I was hoping for was for some recommendations that would actually make this system less complex. And unfortunately, I don't look at the bills that are the product of their valuable time and see, if we were to pass these bills, a system that would be less complex. I am afraid that I may...
I'm actually very intrigued with your notion of acknowledging irreconcilable different points of view, but I'd be curious if you could specify what you think those are, because we can only acknowledge them if they're out on the table.
But the youngest member of the committee, who, by the way, was born the year this bill was originally passed.
Happy birthday.
I was 1 year old.
In my mind...
I was three.
Three plus what, Representative Greenleaf?
What anniversary of that was that, Representative?
That was the first digit, but what was the second digit?
I was 3 years old Celsius.
I need to figure out your system, Mitch.
I told my grandmother once that if you just start reversing the numbers, you could, at least on the first half of decades, you can be doing pretty good. In answer to your question, I think at its core, the irreconcilable differences, the two items that are constantly in conflict and have been for 30 years, are one, the desire to not have any development going on in undeveloped areas, to essentially keep Oregon rural and scenic, and the irreconcilable conflict that has with economic development.
Kind of the way we named the commission and the department, that it is both the Land Conservation and Development Commission. I think you're right. And laying that out makes it clear that wrestling with those where those bump up against each other is the essence of what generated Senate Bill 100, generated the system, and generated a lot of legislative tinkering in the 35 years since the bill was passed. I think it's helpful to put that on the table.
There are other irreconcilable differences too, right? I mean, like I hear very clearly in mine, the irreconcilable difference between my property right is I own this land and I want to keep doing what I've been doing, versus the person next door saying my property right is I can build a supermarket and a subdivision on my land. I mean, those frequently are irreconcilable differences in the definition of what a property right is.
If I might just offer that open spaces are where we farm. It's not only a view shed. I mean, this is how we make money. It's in my family, Carol's side, it's for 100 years. That's the only way they've made money is farming. So, yeah, it does look pretty for people to come and look at our blossoms. That's how this family supported itself for almost 100 years now. And in the community I grew up in Coos Bay, those things that are zoned for forestry, that's how everybody made their living until we had some industrial changes that changed the practices, but mostly environmental legal restrictions due to federal environmental policy that's resulted in a 95% decline in harvest levels on public lands. And so zoning is designed to keep working natural resource properties as well, not just view sheds. You know, I hope later I'll be able to sell some of you all on the concept that if you're really going to just lock it up for view sheds and have it be a special, special treasured place, Senate Bill 100 envisioned that too, a statewide area of critical concern. But that's where you truly have a management plan that really regulates it as a treasure. The zoning should be about working landscapes where people log and people farm, and not just views for Portland or Salem people to drive by and go, "Wow, that looks really nice." And you have to acknowledge that. Compact cities, working landscapes is the whole theory.
But Representative, I think that what you're saying and what I'm thinking is pretty close. I'm a realtor. I believe in personal property rights, but on the other hand, I don't believe that we should ever have subdivisions outside of a municipality. I never believe that we should have high density out in the county. I think that's for your municipalities to take care in their urban growth boundaries and for them to expand. Now, with respect to the municipalities that we have, example, in my particular area, we did not go to the west of Medford because that was good prime agricultural land. We started expanding into the eastern part, and you heard some people even say that wasn't a good deal. So I'm very confused on how we're supposed to expand, even though we're bypassing our prime agricultural land and leaving that into play. and expanding up into the east of Medford, which is virtually terraced with rocks, and yet we're criticized for it. So I have some confusion here, but I agree with you 100%. It's something that we need to have people have the availability to purchase, but do I believe that someone with 10 acres that wants to put a house on their 10-acre property that we know can't earn money or a living at, should they have that right? Yeah. Yeah, they should have that right. Yeah.
Representative Wingert, I kind of distracted your thoughts. Did you want to follow through, or should I toss the ball to someone else?
I think that sparked enough of a discussion for the day.
I think it's a good thing. Did you want to, Representative Hammond?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I am going to have it a little looser here. So if something provokes, I'm not going to try to call on people. I'd like to actually have a dialogue, as long as Representative Hannah gets a chance to complete his thoughts.
Great. You know, one of the things I want to acknowledge is that from the executive summary, and I'm paraphrasing only, I'm just taking little snippets, primary conclusions reached by the task force are that, among other things, Oregon needs a more flexible land use system. The state should coordinate planning for land use, economic development, transportation, and clearly articulate what outcomes we're trying to achieve. Oregon's land use system needs to be simplified to remove complexity. Those are just a few of the things. And yet, much of the testimony that we heard from planners, county planners, were that this bill, as it is, would be very, very costly to the process. And I'm going through these in order. Should consider a single county system. This would be costly. We should eliminate the two county process. The statewide planning we have works. Don't like the two county process. Need to simplify. This is testimony from these folks. Needs to be simplified. The system we have works. Single county system is best. So it's interesting to me, and I wrote a note one day during testimony to Representative Klim, and it simply said, does anybody like this bill? Because we were having testimony from so many folks about, you know, where are we here? So, Madam Chair, you know I wrote you a letter, and one of my comments there is that the bill simply has too many components that would make our land use system more, not less complicated, more, not less expensive. And I think that's in direct conflict to what the task force was trying to get done. I mean, though they didn't talk about things being expensive or not, they certainly talked about making it more flexible, and one might argue if it was more flexible, it could be less expensive. They certainly said it needed to be simplified and to remove the complexity, and one might argue as well that if you were able to accomplish that, you could take some cost out of the system. You know, given that, in our conversation coming down the hall, you know, sections 1, 2, and 3, if you want to say in terms of clearly articulate what outcomes, I don't know how clear they are, but they certainly have some merit if that was the case. Like others, I find sections 6, 7, and 8 probably outside our use. I'm not sure that we've heard very much about a single sentence section 17 except from rural fire districts. And I think we've all received that. And I don't think any discussion has been given to that particular piece, but I don't think it's the land use system's goal to create islands and fire districts. I don't think the land use, the Big Look Task Force would have said, hey, when we get done, let's have rural fire districts that have these little islands created by annexation. So that's probably another piece that ought to be, you know, stricken. Overall, I find the bill not completing what the group hoped to do. And find it very difficult to find the good. So I've named a few of the good because you asked me to do so, and I'm you know, I think there's points there to consider. But I think there are many other places that we should give strong consideration to. How do you simplify it? How do you make it less costly? And so many people have said, for example, that the two-county thing just won't work, shouldn't work. They don't want to do it. We ought to give a pretty strong consideration for striking that as well.
I'm speculating, and it's based on a little bit of personal observation, but I will admit not a lot. I deliberately did not shadow the task force as it did its work because I wanted them to serve as a task force without the sense of someone looking over their shoulders, particularly someone who had her hand on their purse strings. I did enough of that and heard back from them. But I'm speculating that the two-county thing was their answer to a dilemma that we may face in this committee as well, where some members of their task force thought that basically the system we have now was working fine, and some really wanted to respond to perhaps not. Well, some of them probably, Representative Esquivel, would have gone to where you started out with, kind of let local governments decide and the state should butt out.
That's what I said, Madam Chair.
Well, I heard you talk about local governments being the...
That's correct, but I said that the state should be the broad-based policy makers and that people should, local government should have the flexibility to grow within that policy and under the umbrella of that policy.
And
that's a little different
than about make your case then.
And then they'd make the case for approval, mm-hmm. as well as if they made an error, they would have to answer for that error. But I mean, that's what I said. I did not say that the state should butt out by any means, and I did not say that local control should handle it all, because then you'd have a hodgepodge. I think that to the state itself, Senate Bill 100 had great intentions, but I think the real problem was that we as legislators walked away from it and let bureaucrats make up the rules.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
You know, this isn't necessarily about the bill, but it is about some general philosophy, and it's the concept we always have to find the right place to go out, and sometimes you need to go up, and that's what Salem's doing. You see these new condo towers that are going on down in downtown Salem, and not everybody wants to live in those, but there are people who do, and the Pearl District and others are proof that you can make a community where you go up so you don't go right onto the farmland. And it doesn't mean there aren't places, you know, you can't go out, or you go out further to a community that's small that doesn't have it, and they start to grow out concentrically. But in Salem, we sort of figured out that if we go past Gordon Road to the east, it's going to be on good farmland. So we went other directions for a while, and we're sort of hitting the point now where there seems to be a pretty broad consensus of all political stripes that we're going to need to go up. Because we hadn't done that in Salem, really. You know, we had Lancaster. It's not a pretty street. I would acknowledge that. In my district, it's not pretty. Commercial, not you know, strip malls all the way down for a long ways. And it's costing people a lot to move around this town right now because we're stretching out, and we gonna have to go up.
You have to use smart growth within your community.
Yeah.
There may be a kernel of something salvageable in what... and how you clarified your statement that might actually be worth trying to see if we can't build on that notion with the state as the framework.
State has to be the driving force. I strongly feel that. Do I believe that the state has all the answers for Lakeview, for Medford, for Ontario? No, they don't. Do I believe that those people in the local community do? Yeah, they know where to grow. But if we had guidelines for them to do so and let them have that opportunity, then you have a pretty good mousetrap.
Representative Cowan, did you want to?
Sure.
Way
I've got
here?
A couple things left to say.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, it's always interesting to listen to the conversation a little bit, and then you start writing yourself extra notes around the margins of the notes that you wrote, and you don't know what you're talking about anymore. But I think that the concept, one size doesn't fit all, applies to a lot of this conversation. In land use planning, in personal beliefs about what's right and wrong, in just about any land use decision we make, and in our definition of flexibility, are a few of the places that it occurred to me one size doesn't exactly fit all. I tried to look at the overall bill and the basic pieces of it, not necessarily divided out by sections, but more in terms of concepts. I think that the four overarching principles that are focused on in there have some merit, but they oversimplify the situation. If you're trying to translate land use planning to those four principles, it's not going to work. But there may be some benefit in looking at them as we go along. I would hate to completely lose the concept of regional problem solving. I think that's an admirable effort, but it missed the mark. And as soon as we kind of started with the premise of the two-county effort, then, I don't know, you can start with Section 6 and go on to 9 or 10 or wherever else. It's kind of been layered in all the way through there from what I think is essentially an unworkable concept of any two counties will come together to have this conversation. And as we have the discussions about local, for lack of a word, better word, if you will, versus state decision making, I don't think there's anybody that would find it surprising that I'm a pretty firm believer in local decision making. But I really do think, as I thought about it, the other piece of this whole picture that's out there right now that we haven't given adequate time to the discussion about is the layers of complexity that we've layered on with Measure 37, with Measure 49, with the Big Look kind of working at the same time. No one process has had its opportunity to kind of work its way through and live its life. And so we're taking pieces of what's not working in a whole bunch of different things and then trying to come up with a solution. And I just think that's something we should keep in mind as we talk about it. If we could do some corrective remapping of some specific areas, if we could find a workable method for that has some merit, but not exactly in the way it's envisioned in this bill, I think that there was agreement that there should be some sort of a review, call it an audit process, whatever. I think some of the components that are important are addressing infrastructure and transportation investments, various things to do to make it work, strategic planning that includes transportation and economic development and some sort of performance measures for the goals that we are trying to seek. But I think it's been pretty clear that the proposal in here around annexation isn't likely to be workable in this particular form. So I think we need to consider that we're stepping back a bit and trying to update the original goals of land use planning. There are different kinds of housing pressures and need for places for people to live in a variety of settings, including upward and on top of the big buildings, Representative Clem, but also in some other places that aren't necessarily right in the middle of a farm use area. I think that climate change kinds of issues weren't even envisioned in the original land use planning, so that's an important piece to throw in. So I guess I'm reaching the point where I think there are pieces of the bill that could be adapted, but in its particular form, there are some basic premises that have sort of, particularly the two-county region, and then that just sort of fed all the way through into some challenges. There is a need for simplification. Again, not everyone agrees on the definition of simplification. But then allowing the the appropriate jurisdiction the ability to defend their decision. What I've found in working land use planning over the years is the more detail that you try to build into something, the more anyone who is not happy with the particular proposal is going to sift through that criteria for the one piece that applies, so therefore this is a bad idea. If you have a little less complex piece to deal with, then I think it falls to the responsibility of the local jurisdiction making the decision to defend their decision based on some specific outlines. Now, I know that none of that has the specificity of what piece can we keep and what piece can we not, but those are sort of that's the generic thought process that I've come to. And I will also, just one other thing is that we've heard a lot of public testimony. We've also heard read into the record quite a significant amount of written testimony. The challenge in that is that I don't know about everyone else at the table, but whether each of us have had the time and the opportunity to sit down and find the other pieces of written testimony that's been read into the record, have we read all of that? And the challenge if that's not been possible, is that there's some geographical representation in that folks that are a little closer can get here and talk about it, and we've had a lot of testimony that's focused on the issues around the greater Willamette Valley. An example of that is simply one piece of testimony that I pulled out solely because the name rang a bell with me as an individual I know who lives in Northeast Oregon, actually on Palmer Junction Road, which is just outside of Elgin, Oregon, where I spent a few years. So that's why I was interested in it. But Lee Insko's testimony talks about the challenges of an eastern portion of the state. Total population in this area is less than 200,000 people. The land is a combination of high desert, some limited intensive agricultural land, forest land that varies from very poor to decent, rather expansive, rather low value agriculture and grazing land. And basically the premise that he's trying to make is that there is also a need for some opportunity for limited housing expansion into some of those areas, which really don't fit into the same classification of high value farm use that we're talking about in the Willamette Valley. And that's, I think, where we need to find some room for flexibility in our planning.
So on that last point, Representative, you actually provoke a thought.
Uh-oh.
I know, dangerous when I start thinking. A few of us were here, Representative Greenlick. Representative Esquivel, were you here when Senate Bill 82 was passed?
I believe not.
Yeah.
I think that was in the 03?
In 05.
Well, then I was there. I just remember Senate Bill 81 and below. I didn't memorize 82. Okay.
You weren't. So four of us were here. The legislature tasked a group of citizens and deliberately didn't appoint any of us to that group to go out and get the geographic representation that Representative Cowan notes is missing from the testimony we've heard, at least the testimony we've heard in person. And they did that and took all of that and tried to find some balance and synthesize it. And yet we're uncomfortable with whether they did a thorough enough job in that. So is it really that it's the absence of legislators in that group that makes us uncomfortable, or are we uncomfortable delegating that, is essentially my question? What do we conclude from the fact that we said go out, listen to people, they did that, they had meetings in 35 different communities, I think. We didn't want some of us on, or at least the people who wrote this bill didn't want any of us tainting their process. And yet now when they come back to us, somehow were having a hard time with whether they did what did anything useful. So,
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, my response to that, without thinking it through a great deal, is that they did such a thorough job that they tried to get so detailed that the complexity is perhaps extensive, too extensive. It is, in other words, it's not a critique of the committee's effort. I just think that they got a little too thorough, and sometimes when you try to manage every aspect of it, it
so
gets
too far down into
side.
The weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's helpful. You wanted to respond, and then Representative Esquivel.
I mean, my thought was I heard Representative Cowan only speak to testimony we had heard here and the regional nature of that. I didn't hear her comment, and I could be wrong, but I didn't hear her comment directly related to Big Look Task Force.
That's correct.
Yeah. I think it was, I took it anyway as what we just heard, and that's just because of the where we are today. I mean, we weren't tasked with going out and trekking all over the country. They were. I mean, the folks who are closest to us tend to be the ones who get to Salem or those who are most active. So from that standpoint, I think the task force did its job that way.
And I did extrapolate a bit from what Representative Cowan said, but I did that deliberately to ask whether it is at all possible for the legislature to delegate this, or do we need legislators to go and hear that directly?
Madam Chair, I think that we had some great people on that task force.
We did. We did.
And, you know, they're very, very good people, and I don't have a problem with their findings. I guess I'm having kind of a disconnect between what they said in their report and what's in this bill. I guess it isn't what I anticipated by reading their conclusions on what I see in the bill. It's not quite jiving. I guess if that's the best I can say on it. It was different than I thought.
Mr. Whitman, am I wrong in thinking that this bill is a work product of the task force?
Madam Chair, for record, Richard Whitman from the Department of Land Conservation and Development. The bill is a product of the task force. And actually was drafted at least conceptually before the report was done.
So they think that there is a direct crosswalk, whether we see it or not. Fair point. And that's what I thought when I attended the last hearings of the task force. They think that House Bill 2229 is essentially a codification of the report that had the pretty pictures and the graphs and the narrative. Fair description of it?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I hesitate to say that it's a codification of the report. I think that most task force members would say they believe that the legislation advanced the findings and purposes of the report to the extent they felt they could, given limitations of budget and other limitations.
Okay, good. Thank you, and I hope that helps me understand it. It may help other committee members understand it. Representative Greenleg.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I can ramble just a little bit. I wasn't very active in the process in 1973 and in 1975, but as I reconstruct the process, turning out into Senate Bill 100 and 101, I don't think the framers, if you will, if I can call them that, had a vision of where this was going, and they put something in place that was a process and a bit of a vision, and then over the next few years it emerged with goals and a variety of things, and a process emerged, and I think it was a pretty good process that emerged over the next 5 years in that period. A lot's happened in that time. The process is been cluttered with human beings who've been involved in that.
And damn those human beings.
Exactly. It's very hard to control. So there's been good decisions and bad decisions at the state level. There's been good decisions and bad decisions following it from it in the local level. There's been good decisions and bad decisions in the Court of Appeals. A lot's happened, and I was very excited with the possibility of the big look, and I was really encouraged that if we could look back over the system, we could have some independent people doing some report could emerge that would be worthy of us and would guide things in a different in a new direction. I think the report is a pretty document, and it's pretty typical of reports that have ended up being put on a shelf somewhere and soon forgotten, and has some interesting things in it, but I think when it was tried to convert to a legislative theory, I don't think it did justice to the report and to the effort that went on. And as you know, I've been involved in a situation of trying to turn the Health Fund Board report into legislative action, which they were smart enough not to try and do, but to leave it to us, and we've been struggling trying to intuit what they wanted and turn it into legislative language. The first time I looked at 2229, I thought it was... I'll try and be kind. Well, I won't be kind. I thought it was dumb. And at your request, I've gone back over it and tried to see what's salvageable about 2229. And frankly, I still don't think there's anything salvageable about it. And I'll be happy to go over the thing. What I had hoped would come out was something that was clear and moved us in a direction, and that we'd have a fight over it. And I thought it would be something that would be worth fighting about. So we could take our different ideas and see how we could work them through and come out with a product that moved us for the next 25 years. I mean, it seems to me that's what we were hoping for. We were hoping something. Senate Bill 100 moved us from 75, moved us 30 years, and now we need something that's going to guide us and move us in the next 30 years. This certainly doesn't do that, and it's not worth fighting over. Should we do an inventory of what's been going on in terms of the land use laws, the statutes? Well, I thought the Big Look Committee was going to do that and see what we've done and where we are. Should we have a strategic plan? Yeah, we should have a strategic plan. You know, that's... we've been doing that for the last 20 years as well. But should we integrate land use and transportation and economic development, those things, into a single strategic plan? I think it would be a great idea. I don't know how we go there. We could take that report and craft a new bill out of that report that would make something that would be worth fighting for, but it would be, again, it would be intuiting what's underlying that report. It seemed to me that every time they came to a stream of conflict, rather than fording across it, they just backed off and didn't want to even say, well, here are two options, this or this, pick one. They instead just, it seemed to me, in terms of where they get in this document, punted any difficult question that could be there. Yeah, you need regionalization. Oh, we can't. Oh no, not regionalization. Okay, how about two counties? There's a form of regionalization. I mean, it seemed to me it was that kind of compromise over the issues that were really issued. We should debate the question of whether the land use system should be regionalized. It seems to me that's a question worth debating. This bill is not going to be the vehicle for debating that. So I feel sad about an opportunity lost. And maybe we can salvage something that will be called HB 2229, and we can vote on it, and we can get 55-3, or we can get 31-28, or something. But I think it's a waste of time, frankly. And it makes me very sad to say that, because I had really high hopes. So, yeah.
Be among your high hopes.
I thought we would have a clear, bright path for where we need to go for the next 30 years in terms of land use planning. I think our land use planning system has done some extraordinary things, and I think Oregon is far better off for it. And there are lots of pieces in it that are a problem. So I would say, what do we need to correct in what we're doing now, and how do we correct it, and how do we move us if not the next 30 years, the next decade. And I mean, I think there are some key questions. What does private property really mean, and how do we codify it in a way that people feel comfortable about it? What is the role of the community versus the state in terms of land use planning? The kind of questions you're doing. Should we notice that Eastern Oregon is different than the Willamette Valley? I mean, I drove one day from Condon to John Day to Diamond, and I thought as I was driving through there, thinking of all the land use discussions, and I was thinking as I was driving through that land, and I've owned land in Central Oregon, so I understand what you have to do to get rid of the junipers, and I mean, I understand this issue. I thought if anybody could figure out a plan for doing some residential or industrial development here 20 miles from John Day, God bless them, because there'd be some jobs out there and it would be the sort of thing we could look at. Now, my friends and thousand friends of Oregon would string me up for proposing something that would actually allow us to build 100 houses in a factory somewhere between Condon and John Day, but it would seem to me that would be a terrific thing if we could figure out how to do it. I think these are questions that we need to say. I don't think we can let the land use system drift now where it is. I think we have to find a way to give it some direction and to move it in a way that guides us in where we go for the next 30 years. So I was drifting, but I think this is such an important question. And
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you think T2-9 is just kind of more of the same?
I don't think it's more the same. I think it's, we can't figure out what to do. Somebody thought about annexation in Section 17. Somebody thought about regionalization. Well, we can't regionalize. How about two counties? Okay, let's try that. But we need a plan. All right, let's write a strategic plan for it. Hey, our land use laws are pretty screwed up. Why don't we inventory what's going on right now and see what's in the laws and see how, I mean, it was like, we have a barn, let's have a play.
And yet, despite all the conversations about disappointment with this bill, I'm hearing a fair amount of conversation about hopes and expectations people have about the land use system. Not consensus. I'm not hearing consensus, and I'm not going to pretend that that's the case. But I am hearing some themes that suggest to me that there is still work worthy of this committee on this issue.
Absolutely.
Simplification, coordination,
and it's in everybody's interest to have a good land use system.
Clarity.
Everybody.
Yes.
It's good for livability.
Yeah, and my vice chair hasn't had a chance to weigh in yet.
Well, I've been very interested to hear all this.
This cough drop.
Yeah. It was a big one. Yeah.
Well, I've tasked him with trying to shepherd this through.
It strikes me that this has been a very glum conversation so far, and I'm not used to being the ray of sunshine, but you know, I think one of the lessons learned from this, you know, we've talked as though everything is wrong and we were looking for a bill that will fix it all, and this didn't get there. I learned a different lesson. I think we have learned that our land use system has done a pretty good job of achieving the goals we set out for it. And there are questions now about, no, it hasn't done a perfect job, and can we improve upon that? And also, maybe a larger question is, do we need to shift our focus or broaden our focus away from the goals we've been talking about for 35 years? And I think that's a very interesting question. And I think a lot of the good work that the task force did led to some conclusions that didn't get as much attention in the final product or the bill as I would have liked to see. And I'm talking about emphasis on state planning, on bringing transportation, land use, climate change thinking together. I think that's indispensable. I don't see how we can talk about planning for the next 50 years and not do that. I think the issue of complexity, I'm not altogether persuaded, speaking of irreconcilable values, Representative, I
I'm completely open-minded on this topic, but it seems to me that we may not be able to have it both ways here. The systems become complicated in part because of a desire to be sensitive to differences and to be flexible. And the more we try to have a simple system, the more we risk having a system that looks more like a one-size-fits-all system. Not necessarily true, but there's a risk there. And so I'm completely open to having an outside audit. The bill proposes that the department convene a work group. That may or may not be the right way to go about it. It may be more valuable to have an outside perspective on the system and see if there are ways to improve upon it. But I think there is good in this bill. The idea of improving the regional problem-solving process, maybe not in the exact form that the bill talks about it, but the concept of giving local governments more incentive to work together and more flexibility to solve problems, even if they don't follow the letter of state rule, makes complete sense to me. And that's a very important part of this bill, I think. So the complexity, the regional problem solving, looking at infrastructure financing, and again, I do think the two-county provision is not the way to go. We haven't heard anybody, I don't think, speak out in favor of that. But I do think alternatives have been proposed. There are amendments proposed that are different ways to skin that cat. And I think we ought to spend a lot of time over the next couple of weeks looking at those, because I think that would be a very tangible, if we can find ways to help counties reclassify miszoned land, that would be a very tangible fruit of all this labor. And I think that's worth the energy. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, you mentioned amendments?
Just one, I think. Getting rid of the annexation piece.
Oh, yeah. That was yours. Scratch number 17, yeah, that was sent from the onset. Okay, got it. I was going to say
that. That's understand. The only LC drafted amendment that we have in possession, but we have throughout our public hearing process asked people who testified to make conceptual suggestions, and many of those have been distributed electronically to committee members about ways that we might improve the bill.
I think this is essentially
if the task force has done nothing else, I think it has unified a lot of people, including, I think, everyone around this table. And I agree with you, Representative. I think everyone who testified, except members of the task force itself, that while it might have been a sincerely motivated and attempt at compromise, the way they structured some kind of the reclassification piece of agricultural land ain't doing what we think it ought to do. But it is an issue that permeates conversations around land use and the land use system in many quadrants of the state. So they couldn't figure out how to resolve it. They did shine a big, bright light on it. And I think it's something that we ought to roll our sleeves up on and try to see if we can't do a better job of crafting something that addresses that. Representative Greenland?
Chair, I wonder whether it might not make some sense to go back to basics. I mean, I think the heart of this are the 16 or 17, how many land
19.
Use? 19 land use goals. I mean, it sort of reminds me of the story about Moses coming down from negotiating with God and saying to the people, well, I got good news and bad news. The good news is I got it down to 10. The bad news is adultery's still in. I mean, it's... how can we have...
had to ripple through.
How can we have a rational system that's guided by 19 goals? It seems to me maybe we could do something about trying to say which of these really are real. I don't want to do away with the ocean. I don't want to do away with
the Rogue River.
With individual. Well, that's a different question. With individual participation in this, but maybe going back to basics would be a useful thing to do. What do those 19 goals really define what we want to see in a land use system? And if they do, if there are subsidiary ones and principal ones, maybe we can restructure and ask what we can do to improve the land use system. In terms of the goals, I think we could come to some consensus on what makes sense. And maybe I agree. This is a project worth doing, it seems to me.
I agree it is a project worth doing, although to harken back to Representative Cowan's concept, project is probably in the eye of the beholder. I think that we have actually some very good minds sitting around this table, and we are a pretty good microcosm of not only the state but also the legislature sitting around this table, different and diverse points of view and different ways of looking at the world. I would be stunned if even working diligently more frequently than the 2 days a week we have allotted to ourselves, that we could create a broadly accepted substitute for the 19 goals. I think that's a task that is certainly not within our scope, but probably not within our capability over the next 4 months.
That's sort of what they were trying here, isn't it, in Section 2? I mean, it seemed to me they were trying to do that, and then they backed off and said, oh, yeah, these are important, but don't...
But they don't substitute. They explicitly said they don't substitute. But I don't think it's beyond our capability to address issues of how, as a state, in partnership with local governments, we can help with the appropriate classification of land for agriculture and forest purposes in balance with the other things that land needs to be, that land has a value for in the state. I think that's something we could actually, the eight of us, maybe not reach absolute agreement with about, but Representative Greenlick, have a lively, useful debate that would inform all of us and probably end with a product that is not where any single member of us starts from, because there's compromise that each of us brings to it. I think that's worth the effort, and I'd like to see us put some energy into that. Representative Esposito.
I agree on one thing, though. It's very, very important on what we agree upon. No one at this table has said Senate Bill 100 was a bad deal. We all agree it was okay.
That's true.
So I think that's a good basis. We agree on the concept. We agree on what's happening.
It's not PC to say that, so you will not hear it.
So, I think that like I said before, do I think that someone with 10 acres should have a house? Yeah. Do I think there should be subdivisions out there? No. And so I think the concept
except
itself.
Except between Condon and John Day.
Except between Condon and John Day. Excuse me, let me retract that.
I don't have to deal with them or help subsidize their infrastructure. Right?
I mean, exactly. I think we all agree that, it needs to be tweaked, but it's just how far can we tweak it? I guess that's it.
And I think that we have the bill in front of us because the task force had its own challenge in answering the question that you've posed, Representative Esquivel. And they had more time to deal with it than we will have. But I do think the composition of this committee helps us because of the way we bring different perspectives to it. Representative Klim.
I just want to get back to what Representative Garrett said for a moment, because I think it's the same thing that my friend just said here. It's that basically the system is sound. And so, for example, when I drive from Portland to the coast, I hit a certain point, and then I just see farmland. I see a lot of urban, and then I see farmland. Well, that's the theory behind an urban growth boundary. When I drive out to the gorge, I notice that all of a sudden the neighborhoods that, if we had just built out, are now all infilled. They're redeveloped. Well, that's because you couldn't build out. You hit the Scenic Gorge Act. There's no way for Oregon to grow out once you hit a certain point going that direction. You come down, you hit Wilsonville, except for somehow the one Walmart distribution center by Woodburn. You see a bunch of farmland right around I-5. You go from Albany down to Eugene, you see farmland, and then you see cities. So I think that's positive.
My district, you drive down Springville Road, and you see urban, and you see farm.
Corden's just like
really
that.
Really interesting.
Dense housing on one, farmland on the other. But that's the whole theory.
And I bet that's similar in some of the areas that Representative Esquivel described in Medford.
So I think that's the positive outcome, is you've got, and frankly, even though I could get crucified by talking about annexation at all, I think that's the reason they put the annexation piece in there, which is if you're going to grow, then you should have things being done within a municipality. But the issue is, what about the ones that are already there? So they're already urbanized, and this is something Representative Greenwood and I have talked a lot about. It's not about bare ground and whether it gets annexed. I don't think there's a huge issue with that one. It's voluntary. It's about involuntary annexation for people who already live in communities there that are, it's already urbanized. We're not talking about when we take in new ground, do we not lay infrastructure? Yes, we need to. But it's the people who live there already, and are they even using city services, and what does it cost? And that's the danger of this talking just generally. And I think we had clarification that they didn't mean to intend existing urban communities. It was all about new ground. So I sort of get the theory behind it.
Let the record show that Director Whitman is nodding to confirm your point, Representative Clem.
Still a bad idea.
So, well, the difference between involuntary, voluntary, already urbanized bare ground could be discussed at some later date, and I would be part of it. And I'm certainly emotional about the annexation issue. Now, so what Dave Honeycutt said when he was here was, you know, well, so what Chandler said was, it's all about, or, you know, if we're going to accept the notion it's successful and it's all about doing it in the cities, talk about how hard it is to actually build in the cities. I think we should engage in that. What Dave said is, what about these other lands that are out there that people were warring over? For many years we called them secondary lands. We had wars over that, and now we're calling non-resource lands or other land, or we're trying to get a new definition of agriculture. We already have actually a different definition of agricultural land in eastern and western Oregon. That apparently hasn't solved the problem immediately. But I do believe that the process that has to do with the what we would call miszoned lands, the one that originally I kept asking about what's broken with it, it seems to be that to go in and actually get your zone changed is extraordinarily expensive due to lawyer fees. I've been asking LUBA and counties about how much they charge for that process. It's not that much. It's the legal fees in getting your zones changed. So I've got a couple of ideas on that front. No offense. I've got a couple ideas on that front that would still leave the public's right to participate in, but it would help say, you can't bring in your soil scientist that's biased, and you, neighbor, can't bring in your soil scientist that's biased either. You both are going to have to pick off a list that are not there to produce an outcome for their client. They're there to say whether this is actually good soil or not. Now, once you find out it's not, I think the Big Look did a great service by then saying, okay, but these are the other parameters you have to have around once it's no longer a piece of farmland. It still doesn't mean you just build a house right there. It could mean that would cause huge conflicts because the one person that moves there sues everybody around them because they just can't stand pesticides. They just can't stand. But they moved out there because it was not farmland. So I think there are ways to go about even the two-county deal, to go back to one county, to figure out how to change the legal fees. I think it is worth engaging in, and it does answer the question about what about all these miszoned lands. As I indicated in the first meeting, I own a piece. It's clearly miszoned. It's in forest, but it's supposed to be grazing, it says. It probably technically should be rural residential one because there's a house on it. The reason I don't care is I don't want to build more houses. If I wanted to divide it up and build more houses, well, then I would probably need to hire a lawyer and spend a bunch of money. The fact is, I went out and I found something that had an existing structure. Many Oregonians have went and they've done that. They wanted to get their 10 acres out in the country. They found one that was grandfathered in and bought it. And if you open up everything around them for a bunch more houses, you're changing the system on them too. And they worked within the system and paid a higher price for buying an exclusive piece. So there are some challenges and some sideboards once you start on opening up lands that industry and neighbors need a way to be involved in what happens. It's not just automatic that it, because it's not ag land, that it's the right place for a house. But I think we can engage in that and figuring out how to make it less costly and more thoughtful.
And less time consuming.
And less time consuming.
Something that Representative Clem said, harken back to what Representative Greenlick started with about involving those damn humans. And it becomes clear that there have been very good decisions made at the state level, and there have been some boneheaded decisions made at the state level. And you can go down to county levels, and you can go to the courts. And we could probably all say that there have been good decisions and bad decisions at all those levels. Representative Hannah and I may not categorize all the decisions in the same boxes. I may think that this was a great decision, and he may think it was a lousy decision, but there will probably be a few where we both agree, that was pretty sound, and others where we think, no, that was not really based on something that's rational. The other thing is the notion that what the land use system at the state, the land use program at the state level is all about is a process. And yet the way everybody experiences it is in specific instances. It is so hard for us as humans to step back and think about how decisions should get made without putting our own filter based on the decisions we have experienced being made, that we have made ourselves or that have been made to, you know, for us or to us, and keep them separate. And I suspect that that's why we have 5 inches thick of changes in legislation, because through 30 years, legislators didn't like some outcome, and so they tried to draw the box tighter or they tried to widen the box out.
That's our tax laws.
You bet. I think you're right. It does apply the same way there. Somehow, I still want to try to focus us on the process of how decisions get made. And that forces us, if we really come up with a process, a decision-making process, and who's doing it and within what framework, we have to be able to step back and say, if that's structured well, then people are going to make some good decisions within that process, and they're going to make some decisions we don't like, and we have to let go of that. But I don't know how we do that in the context of this. I think that's part of what we're struggling with, though.
Can I ask a technical question? The relating clause here is relating to recommendations of the Oregon Task Force on Land Use Planning. Does that restrict us in using 229 as a vehicle from pushing it beyond the recommendations of the task force? Question.
I'd be happy to see how far we could push. I wouldn't let that be a limitation unless we truly can't succeed.
Or to have a new vehicle.
Or to have a new vehicle. I think that's a possibility. But although it did start out pretty glum, and that's always the easiest part, right? It is always easiest to say, I don't like this. I'm not willing yet to give up on finding what we could fashion out of it, either by gleaning a different interpretation out of the work that they did in their report, because I think the director correctly characterized it differently. This isn't a codification of their report. It is a one way of trying to implement what they learned. And we may very well look at their report and implement it differently. I believe it is worth our trying to do that. this is a good start for that conversation. There is, from people sitting in this room as well as others who've testified to us, some very specific suggestions and some more conceptual suggestions. It is a big enough and complicated enough piece that it's hard to work here without something of a playbook or a step-by-step process. So I'm going to use this conversation as a starting point. I've noticed that both I and Representative Garrett have been taking pretty good notes, and Ms. Ross is taking pretty good notes of the conversation. I am going to ask Representative Garrett, as I said, to try to tease out where the points of agreement and the points of disagreement are, and identify on the points of disagreement what are different forks that we could take. Here's an issue, reclassifying land. Here's one approach, the current process, different approach, two counties. A couple groups here have recommended others, and let's just have one of those good fights that Representative Greenlick says, politely, but a robust debate, and see what that comes out. But I think someone needs to structure that conversation. And Mr. Chair Garrett, that's you. Yeah.
My proposal, a little exercise. I mean, the report suggests that the overarching principles guiding the land use program are, and then they give the four. If they are overarching principles, I wonder whether we could take the 19 goals and try to categorize them under these four principles.
If they meet that criteria?
Well, and then see, I mean, I think we all agree with this. Provide a healthy environment, a prosperous economy, a desirable life, and provide fairness and equity. And see if under those goals we could see ways to enhance the land use system under the context of these overarching principles. Fairness is one I think we all think is important, but I mean this has a prosperous economy, which I think includes an agricultural economy and a forest economy and a manufacturing economy. I mean, maybe they are right. Maybe these are four overarching principles. They seem to me to make sense, but they don't substitute for the 19. So I wonder if we could say, what is there that we could do to enhance the land use system by moving us forward in these four areas, or in some of these four areas, as an organizing way to deal with the problem?
We could do that, but I'd like to actually get some input from the director who watched the task force try to do that. Mr. Whitman, could you join us at the
sure.
So that the mic can pick you up?
You bring your chair with you.
No, that's okay.
Here.
So, Madam Chair, for the record, Richard Whitman. There is a document in the record of the task force proceedings where they did exactly what Representative Greenlick is suggesting, to try to put under each of those overarching principles where each of the 19 statewide planning goals falls. I think the problem is, where do you then go with that? So if I could, with your indulgence, just back up for a minute. Remember that one of the task force's primary conclusions was that the existing land use program is, as several of you have said here today, by and large, working pretty well. And so I think, in listening to a lot of the discussion about the task force recommendations, because of that conclusion, I think their recommendations are, in a sense, incremental rather than completely changing the approach on land use. And I think some of you may have been hoping for something more, but you, in order to understand their recommendation, you need to understand that conclusion that, by and large, the system is working pretty well. And I think that's why they chose not to go back and take on the task of trying to amend or alter particular statewide planning goals. Could that aspect of the system be simplified? I think that could very well be one of the things that could be looked at as part of that particular effort. Some of those goals probably could be consolidated.
But they chose not to take that on themselves as part of their work, again, because of that conclusion. So I hope that's helpful just in terms of understanding where the task force is coming from and why they ended up where they did. Is that helpful?
To me, that's helpful. That's one specific suggestion. I want to also prioritize where we could get the most benefit in terms of output from the committee's efforts. Say again.
Can I ask him a question, please?
Another question? Yes, you bet. We're pretty informal here.
Mr. Woodman, I think these are incremental changes. Were there seeds of aspirational changes in the report? I mean, places where we might be at a different time that we could build on?
Madam Chair, Representative Greenwick, I think there are, and again, stepping back and just looking at it from a 30,000-foot level, I think they were trying to move the program in the direction of greater flexibility, particularly with regard to rural lands and resource zoning. So that was a big aspirational push of theirs. And again, there are different ways of doing that, as the Chair has noted. I think the other areas that I would identify, I believe you heard testimony from Michael Jordan from Metro about the sort of interplay between our land use system and our public finance system. That's another big area, I think, in terms of aspirational work that they believe if we're going to have an effective land use system in the next 30 years, there needs to be significant attention. They didn't have within their charter to take on our public finance system. You have another task force, the Revenue Restructuring Task Force, that's looked at a little bit of that. But those are big issues, and that interplay is very important, I think. And also on climate change, that's probably the other area where, again, they recognized probably long-term in terms of our land use program, there needs to be much more work in that area. But that came in very late in their process, and they simply weren't able to grapple with it in detail. So I would sort of identify those three areas, flexibility, and I would include complexity in that also, public finance and climate change.
Thank you.
So that's one suggestion. What I am going to do is ask Representative Garrett to kind of preside as we put some other ideas on the table of where people might want to spend energy. Looking at the goals is one. Looking at the two-county thing is another. Simplification, I've heard several people talk about. Clarity and audit, I heard several people talk about that. Just identify those, spend a few minutes. Then I'm actually going to, rather than try to construct a work plan by committee, I am going to ask Representative Garrett to create a work plan for the next few weeks that will try to bring specific things that we can spend our energy on. This has been a helpful kind of global look at it, but we can't really move global concepts. We have to look at words on a page, develop that work plan, and then we will try to step through it over the next few weeks.
We might be done today.
We might be done today?
I have one more question.
Yeah.
To ask about. I found it interesting rereading the statutes that we're amending here. Is it immediately clear whether these are the main statutes we need to be working on or whether there are two or three other relevant statutes? Could we get some advice on that as to where there might be other levers that we could be dealing with it? I found this very helpful. I wonder if there, I mean, is it in those inventories where they talk about the statutes to review? Could be. Something that
I suppose the what might be on that list would depend on what you're trying to leverage.
Yeah. So. Well, you didn't mention, I would say this fourth overarching principle is one that got us to 37, which is the question of equity and fairness.
Yep. Yeah.
So.
Okay. So I'm going to give you all some homework. I appreciate that you came
prepared for a pretty good conversation today that really, I think, both helped us see where people are and what might be doable. But I would actually like you to spend a little bit more time. Representative Garrett will follow up individually with people to help him create this process. Not prolonged. I'm not going to drag this out. I think we need to zero in pretty quickly and roll our sleeves up. But please spend a little bit of time either crafting something in writing to him. And I am going to ask some of my colleagues sitting on the committee to go beyond just a toss it in the, or give no further consideration to the bill. I won't change the words that have come forward. And actually think about the intent and a different way of doing it rather than we don't like this approach. And I'm going to ask you to do this fairly quickly because I'd like to spend the next few weeks seeing if we can work through something valuable here. I think from the conversation that there is something valuable. It may very well be that we need to divide this bill into two bills to identify the big picture stuff, big look stuff, and then some of the things, frankly, that would cost money to implement, maybe ones we advance but perhaps don't implement this year in this budget environment. So if you can get thoughts to Representative Garrett by tomorrow afternoon, that would be helpful. I know that's pretty quick. Well, we need to move forward.
I hear you. You put me on four committees. That's what I want to know.
All the wisdom you have to bring through the different steps.
You must have done something wrong.
Representative Hannah and I don't have that problem. We're on two committees, I think, right? But that's just because you have so much more to bring to the party. We have another work session scheduled Thursday afternoon. We have another work session, I believe, scheduled a week from today. We are not scheduling a full work session the following Thursday, but that's because I'd actually like to have a chance to sit down with a few of you kind of individually and walk through what your priorities are. And then Saturday the 28th, we are switching subjects. We're getting into bills on destination resorts. This is our hearing in Central Oregon. We are aiming to go to Redmond. Do we have a place yet? Not yet, but we are trying to go to Redmond for that hearing.
Do we have a time yet?
It's time to drive over.
You had preferred later or earlier? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Like late morning.
Middle, yeah. That would be my
late morning, 10:30 to 1 for the hearing, something like that. Is that late morning?
I'm being particular. I mean, 11 would be better, but it's only because I have a meeting there, which I've told you I'll come.
And I'm struggling with that. I'm having a hard time scheduling the meat of the hearing to be during the lunch hour. But maybe that doesn't matter. I'm flexible. If members of the committee want to work through lunch, and if that helps you attend, I'm perfectly happy to make accommodations that way.
I'd suggest, Madam Chair, we made the tour when we did the Ways and Means tour, and we ate both lunch and dinner during hearings. So, I mean, having a sandwich or something.
How long are we planning on going?
Well, I was thinking we'd probably need to allocate 2.5 hours.
You know, I did one of these in October. We went 5 at least.
I would say 3.
So there's a lot of opinions in Central Oregon about destination resorts, just so you know.
Really?
Really?
Probably only 2.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes or no.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who hold those opinions.
I'm just saying. I'm sure it's probably the same opinion with slight nuances over and over, so you probably could get people.
We've been there on the two-county thing.
Yeah.
We've heard the same opinion over and over again. I'm pretty flexible. I've basically blocked the day, and I'll drive over from Portland that morning. So we can work to accommodate your schedule. Okay.
Which is almost 3 hours.
Yes. Okay. So we will adjourn until Thursday. Please be in touch with Representative Garrett.